And you're listening to the Practice Power Up Podcast with your host, Damian Adler. Damian, the co-founder of Power Diary and a clinical psychologist, will bring to you proven strategies on how to run and grow your practice. Happy listening.
Welcome everyone to Scale for Success, how a virtual assistant can save you time, money, and headaches. And very pleased, very excited to bring this topic to you today. It's something that is close to my heart. And with me co-presenting today, we have Kim Simmons. So welcome, Kim. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here and talk about my favorite topic.
Okay. So for those who may not have been to one of our webinars before, Hello, my name is Damian Adler. I am one of the co-founders of Power Diary and head of customer success at Power Diary. I'm also a registered psychologist in Australia and a co-founder of a group private psychology practice, which is how we originally got and how Power Diary started. So my wife is also a psychologist, and we started a psychology practice many years ago from scratch and scaled it up. Medium-sized practice, and we sold it earlier this year. So I've got experience both directly in the administration of health practices, along with, of course, the software side of things. Now, joining me today, we have Kim. Very excited to have you here, Kim. Perhaps if you could give a brief sort of introduction about yourself and how you are, working in the space that you are and what you do.
Sure. So I have been working as a VA, so a virtual assistant, to therapists in private practice for around 7 years, started in 2016. And I just had my son and I was working in logistics and decided that that wasn't going to be a good path to continue down. I actually wanted to see my son. So I took redundancy and I was just being a mom, and I met somebody who was a therapist, and she was just struggling a bit with invoicing and bookkeeping, things like that, and just kind of asked if I could help. So that's exactly what I did, just started helping a friend. And then that just kind of snowballed into somehow I now own a business and an agency. So I've worked with therapists for a long time. And when the pandemic, came around in 2020, that really catapulted my business. And everybody moved online, but people didn't know how to do that. And so they were reaching out to VAs more than they were before. And I would help people set up systems. And that's how I came across Power Diary. And so that's what I've been doing. And now I've got, courses helping therapists set up their practice themselves. So if they're not ready for a virtual assistant yet, I've got courses in that. And then I also have an agency of VAs. And I love it. I don't know how I got into this, but I love it.
And it seems like a very natural fit for you. And we spoke a bit ahead of time of our interview today to kind of get a bit of more of a sense. And the one of the things I really like about your approach is you really sort of understand the operation of health practices. So and what the administrative kind of requirements are, and I think also the you sort of understand the psychology of health practice owners as well, and how to kind of really help them. And so it's wonderful to have you joining us today and really kind of sharing your experience and your expertise in this. And I think people will get a lot out of it. So thank you, and it's great to have you here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to look at when to integrate a virtual assistant into your practice. So, what gets optimal results and when do you kind of go about doing that? Some key criteria and ideas that you have about finding the right service and maintaining, importantly, confidentiality, and some of the issues that we know that in the health space particularly is important. Some best practices we'll talk about, for that kind of seamless collaboration and making sure that it all works and it's a good fit. And then some information about what to delegate. And I think this will be, very interesting to talk about in a bit more detail, because, by delegating, we can sort of really supercharge efficiency and productivity. And so we'll talk a little bit about what you can delegate, because I think it's often more than what maybe people think about automatically. Do you find that it's what they might originally think they need when you're speaking to them and setting things up, that it's a there's often more you can offer them perhaps what they originally had in mind?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think people usually come because there's a certain area that they're struggling with, whether that's, well, we won't go into all of it now, I won't give it all away now, but whether that's sort of inbox management or invoicing, that's usually the two that people kind of come first of all, but yeah. Then they realize that there's so much that they can actually hand over, and they can just concentrate on doing exactly, you know, what it is they enjoy and what they're good at and what they're qualified for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that is a commonality that when we were talking ahead of time, that, you know, a lot of the drive behind Power Diary is to, you know, help people do what they love doing, you know. And for health practitioners, very few people I think study to become a health practitioner because they love administration, right? I think it's a very rare occurrence, and often even, I wouldn't say it's entirely a mutually exclusive skill set, because, you know, we do see people that are very good at administration and also good at health practice, being a health practitioner, but often, you know, people will find that they really enjoy and are passionate about their health service provision, but the admin and the running of a business, right, is something that is not necessarily a natural skill set or a comfort zone for them. And certainly from a training point of view, there isn't typically much, if any, training in many of the educational sequences that land you as a health practitioner. So it's something that I think that you kind of pick up on as well, is that, you know, this is an area that people can potentially outsource, you can take care of it for them, and often frees them up to do, like you said, what they do best.
Yeah, and that's definitely what I find. I do think when particularly like therapists, like psychotherapists, counsellors, when they kind of start a private practice, they don't really believe that's a business.
Right.
It's like, yeah, I've trained to be a therapist, I've trained in this, and I want to work for myself, but they don't have that business mindset necessarily, or even thinking, oh, this is a business. And they kind of go into it thinking, I want to help people, obviously, yeah, and I want to, you know, I'm doing it because I love it. But actually, if you don't also have that business mindset and realize you are running a business, it can be just, you know, direction to not making any money,
yeah,
being unsatisfied, you know, and resentful because you're not, you know, you're not earning enough and things like that. So it's really important, I think, to realize straight away, even if you're just qualifying and you don't have any clients, that you have a business. When you, yeah, start a private practice, it is a business, yeah, and you need to, you know, get some skills in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this leads nicely into this idea of when to work with a virtual assistant, because there's different points that people could potentially seek services. So there's obviously early, and then there's obviously late, you know, when things have already too late, exactly, things are sort of not going so well. So from your point of view, there are sort of like three areas, right? So the finances, client retention, and personal life. Let's dive into those a little bit more when we're saying looking for the signs. So when it comes to, say, finances, what sort of things, you know, should people be looking out for here that might be an indication that really it's time to get a virtual assistant? This is assuming that they didn't get a virtual assistant right from the start setting up their practice,
yeah,
but if they're running a practice, you know, what sort of things do you think they, what are the flags there that they need one from a financial point of view?
So what I find when it comes to finances is it's all around invoicing, mm-hmm, and where they're struggling either with reconciling the payments, so they are constantly checking their bank account, seeing who's paid, they're kind of not on top of that, they're owed lots of money, whether they're using medical insurance and things like that, because managing medical insurance, I don't know what it's like in other countries, but in England, it's like, it can be really time consuming and hard because, you know, they don't pay on time and there's also excess, and it's, you have to really manage that, you know, mm-hmm, that whole process. You know, people have a certain number authorized and you need to keep track of how many they've had and things like that, which Power Diary helps with amazingly. Yeah. But yeah, so for the finances, it's really around not being able to feel in control of them,
yeah,
not invoicing your clients, expecting them to just pay without an invoice, not not knowing if people have paid, being owed money. So that's kind of like with finances where people come to a virtual assistant usually.
Yeah. And at that point, if they're late in doing that, they'll often find that they're typically owed a lot of money, right? And they don't necessarily have a sense of, they know the bank account's low, they know the cash flow isn't good because there's always outgoings, but there's often that kind of state of feeling something is wrong, it's not being financially rewarding, but it's really, and that sort of not knowing where their finances are at is a sort of source of stress in itself.
Yeah, totally.
That's something that we certainly see as well when we're working with customers. And in Powdero, they can automatically add services and it'll generate the invoice and so forth. But what we found, especially in the kind of earlier days, is that people sometimes wouldn't use the invoicing feature. They would have maybe some other way that they would be doing invoices prior to adopting Powdero. And often the sort of things that you were describing would be common, that people would come to us and say, hey, I want to start using the invoicing, I haven't been doing it. And when we talk to them and help them get their invoicing set up, and if they weren't sure how to do it, the things that you were describing were very common, that they sort of would feel under financial pressure, they'd feel often a bit overwhelmed, because they weren't really clear on who owed money and were spending a lot of sort of time on that. And of course, sometimes in under financial duress as well. And so this is something that, so if you're finding you're struggling to keep up with the financial side of it, a good flag or a good sign that maybe a virtual assistant can really kind of help take that pressure off you and take care of some of that. Okay, yeah. And the second one you've mentioned here is around client retention. And this is something that, you were saying, either complaints coming from clients or issues with retaining clients. What have you noticed there with customers, over the years in relation to client retention being an issue or client complaints?
Yeah, so I do find that a lot of people really focus on the marketing side and getting new clients and things like that. And to me, obviously, that's important. You always need that, people don't stay in therapy forever. Yeah. And, even if they are in long-term therapy, they might need something different and go to someone else. So we're not trying to keep clients that don't need us anymore, I'm not a therapist, but you know what I mean, the therapist.
Yeah.
But it's about losing clients before that time, clients before they're ready to move on, because you're not giving them good customer service outside of the therapy room. Yeah. Obviously, what happens in the therapy room is so important and, the main reason that someone would stay. But if they're finding it really hard to book with you, if they can't get hold of you to reschedule, or you don't have clear, cancellation policies, and sometimes you're charging them for a missed session and sometimes you're not, if they can't book, if they can't reschedule, and then just if they can't get hold of you, and just having that customer service kind of outside of the therapy room, making it really hard to pay, kind of going back to finances a bit, if it's hard for them to pay, or they've forgotten to pay and then they feel really anxious about the fact that they haven't paid and you haven't asked them and the things, the bill's just building up, so people will leave for stuff that happens outside of the therapy room. Yeah. And so if you're having a really high turnover of clients, that's also a big red flag to needing some help, with your admin.
Yeah. And it's often the simple things that a virtual assistant may be able to help with it is going to move the needle with that, right? Because it may be improving that communication, making sure there's follow-up if people contact for administrative matters, that's being handled efficiently. And I think the other point to add, I think, around this, and certainly we found this in our practice, but we see it with customers. It doesn't matter whether it's in Australia, UK, or customers in the US. I think these themes are universal. But the customers that leave because they're a bit disgruntled about a customer service issue or something, they're kind of invisible in a way, because they kind of drop off and you don't necessarily kind of notice straight away. But then that person also goes back, if they were referred by a doctor, for instance, that person might go back to the doctor and they're maybe less than enthusiastic in how they speak about the service. And it, like you said, it may be nothing to do with the therapy or the health treatment that was provided. That could have been great. But a patient evaluates the whole kind of service, and their demeanor when they're talking to their doctor or whoever referred them, if there was a referral, that can really get impaired by that lack of customer service, and that sort of does a lot of damage to businesses, I think, and to practices that is silent. You know, it's not, you know, people often won't overtly go out and complain. You know, they'll just quietly sort of go elsewhere or just not rebook, you know, and we see that. So when we see a practice that really has very sharp, really customer-focused, you know, customer service, like you're describing, that practice will tend to do well and continue to do well. Like it will sort of be a snowball effect. Whereas ones that struggle, like you say, that it's like a drag on their business that they don't necessarily sort of see. And certainly the cost or the hiring a virtual assistant or something will significantly be offset and be dwarfed by the benefit in that kind of regard. Now, the third thing here is around personal life. What do you see, like, when people come to you? And I imagine when we're talking about personal life, it's when people are sort of coming to you late in the process, so they've perhaps got their practice up and running. And what sort of things do you see from prospective clients when they come in and it's affecting their personal life and you know that they need a virtual assistant? What are the telltale signs that you think people should look out for?
So I think if it's them working more than they want to, you know, if, for example, they work in the day seeing clients and then they're doing a lot of work in the evenings or even at weekends. And so it's really just like taking over their life, like the business is taking over their life. And that's kind of where it is. You know, their families might be complaining to them, you know, their husbands, wives, kids, you know, whoever it is, are complaining that they're working too much. And they just feel, you know, getting to a point where they're like burning out, you know, they're getting burnt out from the whole process.
And you find in the mix of the work they're doing too, like, is a lot of that extra stuff is the admin work that really could be, you know, outsourced or someone else could do it if perhaps they if they're trying to kind of carry it all themselves.
And also on top of that, you know, and I know we'll get into this later, but a lot of the time when that's happening, it's because there aren't any like standard operating procedures and things like that, where a virtual assistant can put them in place. So if they are, you know, if a therapist is working, let's say 20 hours a week on admin, they could probably reduce that by hiring a virtual assistant and only pay them maybe like 10 hours. And that's like, that's huge. Like, I don't work with any clients. I do 10 hours a week apart from like really big group practices.
Yeah.
So I think as well, that's a really important thing to kind of note. It's just because you're working X amount of hours on your admin, it doesn't mean an assistant will, because a VA is an expert in admin and they will put in processes and procedures to cut some of that. So some of the stuff you're doing doesn't even need to be done. Like, for example, with like the bookings and even invoicing, if you're using a system like Power Diary, invoicing can basically be like wiped out. Whereas you might be doing it all manually currently. So it is about weighing up the time you're doing versus what you could systematize with things that you pay for, like a system you pay for, and then an admin person that can do some of that work that A, you don't enjoy, B, you're not very good at, and C, takes you a really long time. And that all of that stuff won't be the case with an assistant. They will enjoy it. They will be good at it, and it won't take them very long.
Yeah, I think that's a very important reminder, isn't it, that it's not going to be a one-for-one translation of time. And I think running our practice, it was something I used to be very overt with our admin team, is that I couldn't do their job, right? Like, you know, because I don't have the skill set in the same that they're experts in administration, and would be far more efficient. You know, their worst day would be better than my best day when it comes to administration, because, you know, that's what they think about all day and optimize and on top of it. So it's a good reminder, like, that it's that's right, it's not a one for one. Okay, let's jump on to, you know, people that are new to private practice, because I think there's we touched on this a little bit before, but you've got some advice based on your experience over the years of kind of seeing the way, the different pathways that people start practices and when they come and seek your services. But you had a few tips here around what they should do or what can be really helpful early on if people are starting private practice. So first one, take a business course. And what sort of course do you have in mind here when you're thinking about a business course? So we're not talking about an MBA, right? Like a, no. What sort of things do you have in mind here, do you think, to sort of make a difference for practitioners?
I mean, they can be really basic courses. I'm sure most governments have free courses that you can take. I know in England they definitely do. And there's, so you can just do an online course just about starting a business. And really you want to, one of the main things you want to learn about is expense, you know, your expenses and your so basically being able to do your bookkeeping, because you want to know what it is that you can expense, because you don't want to be paying too much tax for the work you're doing when you can offset some of that. But also just understanding what it takes to run a business. And like I said, this can be done for free or just with some, you know, a short online course, really. Nothing major.
Yeah. And you can sort of learn an awful lot very quickly, can't you, with some of those. I think most countries in which we operate, so we'll tend to have, like you say, a government, that sometimes there'll be professional bodies that will offer them as well, that are online courses that you can do that just sort of orient people to the sometimes just the legal requirements of running a business, other things, a few tips and tricks there as well. The second one is to establish the SOPs. So these are the standard operating procedures for things. And this is something that we, so with PowerDiary, we actually built an online manual and integrated it in, and all accounts have that for this very reason. But rather than me talk about why we did that so much, it's probably more interesting to hear from you. Like, why do you think SOPs are so important, and even particularly at the start, you know, of setting up a business? Because I think people don't necessarily think about it.
I think SOPs are so important because if you don't have them, each of your clients are going to get a different experience with you. And that's not what we want. We want everybody to have the same experience, have the same, you know, rules kind of thing. You know, if you have a cancellation policy or a no-show policy, you want everyone to experience that same policy. You don't want to be able to say to one person, oh, I'm not going to charge you for that because of X reason. You know, you want to have those things thought about up front.
Yeah.
And there is never too early to do SOPs, you know, but it's also never too late. So if you don't have any now and you are established, it is worth just taking some time to sit down and have a think about all of the policies and procedures that you have in your practice. And I've got a free resource called the Private Practice Workflow, which is not the greatest name. But anyway, that's what it is. And what it is, it helps you think about every single process from the whole client journey. So from inquiry all the way to the final, you know, session.
Yeah.
And so there's some questions in there to kind of, you know, to get these answers out of you. But what you really want to think of when you're doing like your practice paperwork, so you could do this alongside your practice paperwork and have all your procedures in there and then have them, you know, typed up somewhere else, like in, you know, the manual, which is great. It's such a great idea to put everything in one place so that everybody can see it in the business and things like that. But yeah, you want everyone to have the same experience. You want to understand how you're going to deal with each incident as it comes up. And you want to think about that from a place of like, I'm not thinking about, you know, John Smith, whose dad's just died, and I feel really bad for him, and he's cancelled late notice. You want to think about it from, I'm not considering any client. I'm just, this is what I need for my business. This is what's right for the clients. And then, you know, having that in place so that you don't have to constantly make different decisions throughout the day about what you're doing.
I think that's a really nicely put. And I think it also, when there are established policies and a consistent way of doing things, I think it gives patients more confidence in the service they're receiving too, because it's very organized. They know what to expect. They can, that can be flagged up front. It can be reinforced through that, the client journey. And it's very consistent and doesn't feel that things are kind of being made up on the fly, which kind of introduces, it can introduce sort of, I think, uncertainty or a question about the professionalism sometimes of the practice. And it's, you know, often unfair in a way, because, you know, the, you know, practitioners by and large are working very hard to provide a great sort of health service, but sometimes these things can sort of detract, you know, accidentally from that that overall experience. I think the other thing too around the importance of SOPs, so standard operating procedures, or just, you know, policies of how you like things to be done, is that it reduces the dependence of the operation of the practice on a single person. So, you know, reduces it, instead of it revolving around the ideas that are stored in the head of a practitioner, or even if there is a either in-house admin or a virtual assistant who's involved, if those things aren't sort of documented, then you know, and something happens to the person that has it all in their head, then it's very hard to scale. It's very hard, you know, for the practice to operate without that person, and means that, you know, it introduces a business weakness. It also means that if someone has a personal issue or they leave the practice or something happens, then all of a sudden people can find themselves in trouble. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, I think when people think about SOPs, you know, or having a policy or a manual, that they sort of make it more complicated in their head than what it is. But it could just be dot points about this is our no-show cancel, you know, our late cancellation policy. This is how it operates. Information we send out to new patients, you know, and it's just that kind of the time frame that we do it, those simple things that are inside people's heads often, and getting that documented somewhere. If you use PowerDiary, of course, you can put it inside the practice manual.
Right, just with that one as well, you also don't want somebody that you've hired making decisions for your practice either. Yeah. So you don't want a client turning around to you and saying, oh, you know, let's say Kim. Yeah. Kim said I had to pay for my session last week, but you don't even know that they've made, you know, that. So you want to have those, either you do them by yourself or you work with an assistant. And we always do this. So like, we're not taking on clients now, but when we do take on clients, this is the first thing I do. I won't work with somebody unless they go through these procedures with me, because I'm not going to just take on, you know, something and not understand what's going on in the practice. So we actually go through that private practice workflow together at the start of a meeting. And I would suggest doing that with anybody that you start working with, is just go through those procedures so they are 100% sure of how they, you know, how they should speak to your clients, what the rules are around certain things, and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the third point here was around when people are setting up a practice, is to consider the cost of doing your own admin. And so this is sometimes a barrier, right? So people will think about engaging a virtual assistant or someone in-house, but they'll think of it as an additional cost. But what's the counterpoint here that you think it's really important for people to sort of think about and to factor in?
Well, I think the first point is what I said before about how many hours you're doing.
Yeah.
So I would hope that as a therapist, you are charging a lot more per hour than what a virtual assistant would. So all those hours that you're working doing admin, that is costing you, because it's hours you can't see clients, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's just take 10 hours. Let's say you're doing 10 hours of admin a week and you usually charge £100. So that's £1,000, right? That it's costing your business to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas you could take on one extra client and outsource, and you'd probably be cost neutral.
Yeah.
Like having one extra client, not doing those 10 hours, but doing one client hour a week, probably paying the virtual assistant for 5 hours at a much reduced rate. And you're probably going to end up being like, so you'll take on one more client, you'll hire the virtual assistant, you don't have to do the 10 hours work, and you're not losing any money.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying about, you might be spending 10 hours, but the virtual assistant isn't going to be, and you can replace those 10 hours just with one extra client per week, and you'll cover that cost.
Yeah.
Just as an example, I used to work with a psychologist and he rented rooms out. So he did invoicing for that room rental every month.
Yeah.
He used to charge £200 an hour and see 6 clients a day. So one day he would not work at all and he would just do the invoicing. He would lose like £1200, right? If I've done my maths right.
Yeah.
On top of my head. Right. So he'd lose £1,200 for that day. Yes, he was doing his invoicing, but that was, you know, all that money he was losing.
Yes.
And so he wasn't seeing his clients losing £1,200. In the end, finally, he approached me to work with him. At the time, I was only charging £20 an hour, and I did his invoicing in 2 hours. So it cost him £40 to outsource this job.
Yeah.
And he was then able to earn £1,200. So in fact, he gained £1,160 got all his invoicing done. He wasn't stressed because he absolutely hated this, which is why it took him 6 hours, because he used to do an hour and then go for a walk and kick something because he'd get annoyed. You know?
And he probably procrastinated as well, I'm sure, because he doesn't like doing the...
He didn't have a good process. He didn't have all these filters set up, which I set up for him, so he didn't have to sift through thousands of emails to see what's were late cancelled. I filtered all that out, took all that away.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting somebody who knows how to do it, can do it so much faster and then can save you money, because then you can work and do the thing you like doing for more money. So, you know, I do think that's, it's like that, is it sunk cost fallacy, where you think like, oh, it's not costing me money by me doing it. I'm saving money, but actually you're really not. And you're just causing yourself so many more headaches by doing things that you just don't enjoy and don't, you know, you don't want to do.
That's right. I think it taps into this idea of opportunity cost, right? So we think about the cost of, okay, we hire a virtual assistant, we're going to pay X amount. And so that comes to our mind very easily. But the opportunity cost is the flip side, as you're describing. So it is, you know, what are the opportunities I'm passing on or that I'm missing out on because I'm doing it myself, and the inefficiencies, you know, of that. And I think when wife and I first started our private practice, so we sort of had the idea from the start that we were going to make it a group practice. You know, she started in it first. I stayed working in the, I was working in the public sector, so I stayed working there to keep the money coming in while we built the practice. But very early on, we looked at it and realized, okay, it didn't make sense to have an in-house admin person because we were very small. But what we realized is that if my wife was in a consult and we missed a phone call, for instance, to the practice, and that could be a doctor who might be a potential referral source, it could be a patient directly wanting to book in, and we missed that, then we would potentially miss out on that business, that patient, or even obtaining that doctor as a referral source. And so very early on, we made the decision to have a virtual assistant. And we actually couldn't, there was none in our region at the time. This is sort of going back 15 years ago or so. And so I had to actually go and talk someone into it, that they ran a serviced office. And so they were sort of had the idea, but they weren't doing it for off-site, you know, for businesses that weren't within that. So I had to go and convince them that it was a good, you know, business for them to go on the line. But it meant that we would, in our case, we had them answering the phone, you know, with our business name. We had them trained up, all the rest of it from a confidentiality and health privacy point of view. But it meant that we never, ever missed a call. That catapulted our practice and accelerated the growth so much because, you know, we would have not realized all the missed calls that where they wouldn't leave a message. And it was an opportunity that we were missing out on that would have been invisible. You know, you'd never know that that's what the true cost of not having, you know, not having an admin person, or the savings we were making by doing it ourselves, just how expensive those savings were. We kept that service for opportunity cost of something that's so easy to kind of not see.
Work smarter, not harder. Power Diary, the complete practice management system for allied health professionals. Our all-in-one system with over 100 powerful features for health practitioners includes appointment scheduling, client messaging, SOAP notes, telehealth portal, payment integrations, and much, much more. Let Power Diary streamline and simplify your day-to-day operations so you can take care of clients. Join a live demo or start a free trial today. Learn more at www.powerdiary.com.
Okay, let's jump into what you sort of to look out for in a VA service. And I think, you know, and I think people listening perhaps already may have a sense that the way you approach it is perhaps a different experience to what they may have had when they've looked into this space, because there's a, I think fair to say, you know, whether it's in Australia, in the UK, whether it's in the US and Canada, that it's a very like large variety of types of services and types of setups that are providing these services. So what are things you think people really need to sort of look for and focus in on when seeking a VA service? And yeah, what advice could you give people in this space?
So, yeah, so the first thing around like confidentiality, I think it is really important to look for a VA that specially works with therapists in private practice, psychologists in private practice, you know, works in that field, because then they understand it, you know, really well. They understand the confidentiality, you know, they'll understand HIPAA in America or GDPR or whatever it is that, you know, your region covers. So they'll understand all that. You really want to have someone who is professional, so they will provide you with a contract. The contract should come from the virtual assistant because you are our client. So we're the kind of we're the person that needs to give the contract. Yeah. But you can give NDAs, so non-disclosure agreements. You can sign things. You can ask virtual assistants to sign. I have had done that a couple of times. In the UK, we have something called the ICO, which I think is the Information Commissioner Office or something. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's you become a member of that, and it means that you have support around GDPR. Mm-hmm. So if the virtual assistant would make a mistake, they can then go to the ICO and get advice on how to deal with things like that. My third client that I worked with asked me a question in the interview, which was, what would you do if you sent a report to the wrong doctor?
Wow.
It wasn't to put me on the spot or to like, but she wanted to understand like what I would do. Did I understand the procedure around that? Did I understand what GDPR meant and understand what it would mean for that patient that had been, you know, that had got their information sent to the wrong person? So asking that kind of question is really good because you just get a sense of like, do they actually understand, you know, even if it's, I would come to you. Like that's actually one of the best answers because, you know, because it's like, okay, at least they know to like that they would actually tell me if they've done that. I was working for somebody else and somebody sent me a report of somebody that I didn't know, you know, she wasn't on my client's caseload. And I let her know and I was like, just so you know, I've deleted this. Like it's, I haven't got record of this anymore, but this is not one of our patients. And she was just like, whoops.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh God,
not did not instill confidence, right?
Yeah. I was like, oh God. Yeah, she didn't, you know, say anyway. So just kind of like asking questions in the interview and not being worried to do that because it's your business at the end of the day, and they can, you know, virtual assistants can make mistakes.
Yeah.
And they can cost you money if you don't get the right person.
Yeah.
So I would definitely start with that, you know, making sure that they have business insurance and asking for a copy of it. So you can ask for, you know, all of these things, the ICO certificate, their business insurance certificate, and also get references as well. The best way to find a VA is to ask your friends, like ask people who are in your industry, who are they using, who would they recommend? That is going to be the best way for you to find a reliable person because, you know, like with everything we're talking about, you know, with therapy practices having, you know, no policies and all that kind of stuff, virtual assistants can also, they can vary in qualifications and not qualifications like actual, you know, degrees and stuff, but like in, you know, if they're going to stick around for a long time and things like that, because you don't want to keep training new people all the time.
Yeah. And I think that also another point there that we sort of looked at as well is around what their turnover of staff is within the VA service itself. So are they going to allocate a key person that is actually going to be directly sort of managing the primary kind of contact? If not, what sort of pool of people are going to be, you know, and what their background training, induction, so forth is to make sure that, because I think there are some VA services that are set up that are not like typically the ones that are necessarily focused on health, and they may have a high turnover of people within that service, and I think that introduces risk, you know, in that in terms of quality control, and also the risk that the training that you might do or the sort of knowledge that the person might get, if they're constantly got new people coming through, then I think the risk of there being an issue goes up, you know.
And there's a difference between hiring one single person, because most VAs will just work for themselves, it will just be their business, and you know, they just work for themselves. And then you have like an agency, so you might have like, for example, with my agency, there's me and then I have a team of people that work day to day. What you really want to look out for with an agency is that you have one key account manager. So you'll have one person that deals with your account 90% of the time, and the only time somebody else would step in would be for holiday cover and things like that. I've spoken to agencies here where they don't do it like that, and it's like anybody can jump in and do it, and that just fills me with dread, because they don't, it takes a few weeks or even months to learn a practice, learn individual clients, because there's always the clients that like, you can't send that person an invoice, it must only go to their mum, or you can't, you know, it takes time to learn that kind of stuff. And Power Diary is great for that, because you can add contacts on, and so you can never send an invoice to the wrong person because you say who it's going to go to, right? But if you don't have a system like that, you need somebody to really understand your practice and your clients.
I agree. I think that if they don't have a key person identified, and there are some business models where they don't, but then it means the importance of having those sort of standard operating procedures clearly documented becomes even more I think that the more people that might be handling the processes, and depending on the degree of service they're providing to, but making sure that those things are really well articulated becomes even more important, because you get increased variability with increased people, servicing your account, and therefore if it's not very clearly articulated what needs to be done, then you get that increased variability, and often where we see issues arise from that. So that's good. And that location you mentioned also here, there's a couple of sort of pitfalls here, right? So when you're looking for a VA, where does location come into it for you?
Okay, so and then I do want to go back to the practice management systems after, but with location, although they're virtual, and I could technically work for anyone, and we did have a client in Singapore, I do think though you really want to find someone within like a couple of hours of your time zone, just so that they are awake when your clients are awake, and if you needed to, let's say you needed to cancel your whole day because you were sick, you want the VA to be awake to do that. You don't want to have a cold or whatever it is that you're calling in sick for and then having to email or contact all of your clients yourself. You want to just tell the VA, I'm sick today, please cancel my day, and know that they're going to be around to do that. Location is important just for that reason, and that's specific to I think this industry, because VAs can literally work for anyone if they're in a different kind of industry, but with this specific one I do think you want someone within a couple of hours of your time zone, to maximize the efficiency of the service.
Absolutely. And I think there's also something about local knowledge that can be helpful there too. It's sort of one of the reasons that our support teams, we have them located in the main countries that we serve, so in Australia, UK, some in Europe, and then US and Canada, because the local nuances of what the health system, how that health system operates, and it's something that I think it's very hard to do across borders, well, when you're getting down to that nitty-gritty detail. And so having, in our case, it's support team members that are located and living in those countries makes a big difference, because then they really kind of understand that context and that environment. And I think for patients, it's the same sort of thing. If they get the sense that terminology is a bit different that might be getting used by a VA who might be a long way in a different country, different culture, things like that can be, introduce concerns and can make it a little bit more or less efficient, less effective, and reduce confidence sometimes. So I think having that alignment, it's not, I think there are workarounds, but I think it makes a huge difference where there is
and things like medical insurance as well, that varies so much in different countries, whether it's like here where it's all private medical insurance, but then in America obviously it's totally different. Like I don't know that system at all, so I could be like great for certain things of American VAs, but if they needed help with that kind of stuff, I would have no clue. So definitely having that understanding around that as well, because that can be a really big part of the practice. So
absolutely, and exactly that. So in Australia we have, say, Medicare and our Australian support team. No Medicare there. In the US, we have Medicare there too, but it's actually a completely different type of program and means something very different. So our US team, we cross train so people understand both, but if we were trying to provide support out of one country to the other, that some of that nuance can easily kind of be lost. And it's the same, I think. And you want to jump back into to talk about practice management systems. So this, when looking for a VA service, is something that you sort of flagged as important to look at what they're using.
I think that it's really important that if you do have systems, whatever it is you're using, that you go to a VA that understands them, because there's going to be less training involved, because you won't need to train them on the system. You'll just need to say, I use Power Diary, and the VA will be like, awesome, I know that system, and can like pick that part up. Yeah. Yes, they'll need to understand your practice nuances, but they don't need to know how to add a book in, you know, they know how to add a client or whatever it is. So that's really important. Getting them to understand, you know, having someone like that, but also that can be really helpful, because then they'll see what other therapists are doing on the system, and if you're not doing it, they can say to you, do you know what, this process works really well for another client I have. Maybe if we implemented this, it will save you time, it will save you money, it will speed up clients paying, things like that. So often when you have a VA that's used to a system, and we only work with clients that use Power Diary, for example, that's like our chosen, you know, obviously our chosen EHR. And so we won't work with people on other systems, because every time someone comes to me, it's like, I'm using, you know, Write Up or Click Up or whatever it's called. I'm like, oh my God, like, why are you using them? Because and then they complain that they don't do this and they don't do that. I'm like, yes. And that's why if you switch here, you can do that. So whatever system it is you're choosing to use, you want to use somebody that's used to it, that works with it already for training, also for that benefits of like them being able to come to you with additional processes that you can put in and just like, learn it. And also then they'll be quicker. If I was switching between a client who used Power Diary and a client who used something else, and then a client who used a different one, I'm going to be slower, because I'm going to be not used to using a system and forgetting where things are, and then the onboarding process might be slightly different, so it's going to slow me down. So you really want somebody that's just used to using, you know, the one system for all of their clients, really.
And then it becomes a proficient in that, and you get that, like you said, the benefit of working with other clients in the same system. That's good. Let's jump into idea about what you can kind of delegate to a VA. So what can you actually get your VAs to do and take off your plate?
Basically anything that's not the actual therapy.
Exactly.
We can't jump into the room and do the therapy, but anything else outside of that we can do. So all of the client communication, and people, that's like the one thing people get really nervous about, like, oh, I don't know if my clients will want to talk to you. But they're so used to now dealing with receptionists and assistants and things like that. I really don't ever see that as a problem, you know, as long as you're up front with your clients, let them know that you're working with a VA, or let them know that you're starting with a VA, they will be fine. And anything that they need to do, you can deal with that in the therapy room anyway, if they have a specific issue that, you know, you can talk about that with them. But that really, like, I've worked with dozens of clients and this does not come up, you know, it's a fear that comes up with everyone, but it doesn't actually, you know, it doesn't, it's not a realized fear, you know, in the end. So also it can really reduce the communication as well. So people think, oh, like, I don't know how you're going to deal with this client because they message me all the time. But when you put in that boundary of, just so you know, for anything outside of, you know, the therapy room, you'll contact Kim now. Like, Kim's a VA, right? So, you know, contact Kim if you need to reschedule your session, contact Kim for payment issues, and you'll find that that communication will really reduce. People like to contact the therapist a lot more than they will contact the VA. So again, you won't be having to deal with there's many emails and things like that, that you are, the VA won't. Dealing with inquiries. So if an inquiry comes in, getting a discovery call or an intake session or something like that booked in, onboarding those new clients, sending them a welcome email with all of the information, sending them the paperwork, you know, which all, you know, can be done online. And then entering that information onto any the system you're using. So getting all of their information. Invoicing and bookkeeping, so anything with regards to finances. And people think that's going to be difficult as well. So let's say you're not using Stripe and you're just using like BACS payments. All the VA would need is like your bank statement once a week, and then they can reconcile payments and chase any overdue ones. It really is quite simple. I think people worry about things like that, like, oh, how will I get that information to you? But it's just a really simple, you know, send us a bank statement and we can deal
reconcile
with that.
If they're paying, exactly, they're paying direct deposits, or if you're working for companies and invoicing companies and they're paying directly into your bank account. So I think in UK that BACS payment, but other countries they might call it like a direct deposit or a direct money transfer, that's going to show up in the bank account. It can be reconciled back across, and like you say, they don't need access to your actual bank account, your online, you know, banking. necessarily, or you can even give permission. Most online banking services will have restricted permission that you can give, so someone can view only, you know, access to that business account and then reconcile from there. So that can be done fairly easily.
Yeah. And then medical insurance, like I said, so all of the admin around medical insurance, which we know can be really high. And then bookkeeping as well. So I think it's really important to do your bookkeeping monthly. And this is a task I know that people don't do. They might put off until the end of the tax year, and then they really stress out and like, oh my God, I need to like get all this stuff done for taxing. But I think it's really important to know the health, the financial health of your business throughout the year. So you can make good financial decisions and things like that. So you can get that done by the virtual assistant, and then they just give you a report each month that you can easily just look at and see, okay, what did I make? What was my expenses? What was my profit? All things around booking, obviously, scheduling, rescheduling, cancellations of appointments and things like that. Report writing is more like, so client notes obviously would be done by the therapist, but if a doctor requires a report or if a medical insurance requires a report, you can just send your assistant a voice note or type it up really roughly, and then they can put it all, you know, nicely onto a formatted document. So really anything. There's other things we do as well. Some clients have, you know, other things going on in their practice. Maybe they have groups, and they, so we organize groups and things like that. But it's literally kind of anything you can think of that's not done in the therapy room, a virtual assistant can do.
And often, as you were saying before, do it more efficiently and than what the you know, more efficiently and more cost effectively than what perhaps people can do themselves. The other thing too, I think, in getting a lot of these things done is it frees up the sort of headspace of the therapist, being sort of kept on top of, so it's not building up, it's not becoming a stress. But also the attention is sort of more focused on being present in, you know, for the treatment. And whether it's someone who's a physio, or whether it's psychology therapy, or whether it's a massage practice, it doesn't really matter. That that kind of being present with the person in the room, the patient in the room, is vital. And if someone is thinking about the fact they're behind on, you know, invoices, and there's phone messages and emails to catch up on, and that patient that contacts all the time, you haven't replied to them yet, you know, I know myself, like that it divides your attention, and it makes it much more difficult to be present in the moment and with the person that you're providing a service to. And as much as you try, those things, you know, everyone's human, right? And it affects that. So being able to sort of do that, and like you're saying before, if you use a practice management system, then a lot of these things can be done and streamlined through that as well. So good, right? So it's more than just like phone calls and emails, right? And that's the sort of the take home here, right? Is that people often think about it's just someone to kind of answer the phone if I can't answer the phone, but there's actually a much broader kind of range there. You had a few points here around best practices that make a difference. What are the things here that are sort of important to keep in mind, do you think?
We've got practice management system account set up. So this is if you don't currently have a system and you work with a VA that understands it, then they can actually do all the setup for you. Yeah. So you can get that done, and you can work with your virtual assistant on your SOPs to get all that done before you start working day to day with them. So if you're considering, you know, starting with Power Diary or whatever, then you can get somebody to do that for you. Yeah. The thing I love about Power Diary is the access permissions. I mean, I say this a lot. The thing I love about Power Diary, and if you watch my YouTube channel, I literally say that all the time.
And to be clear, we're not paying you to say that, right?
Like, this YouTube channel, I've noticed I say that a lot. But the access permissions are great because you set them up at like system level, and you will need to give your virtual assistant basically full access, because for them to be able to, you know, add on clients, complete the onboarding process, sort out their invoicing, all that kind of stuff, they do need, you know, high access. Mm-hmm. But you can then limit it based on so admin and clinical notes, for example. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to store your clinical client notes on the system, you could do that without your virtual assistant being able to see it, even though they can see everything else. Yeah. And you can also change access at client level as well. So if you are a group practice, but you don't want all of the therapists to be able to see all of the clients, you can turn off, you know, you can select who can see. So only the main therapist, plus the VA can see this information, but the other therapists within the practice don't have access to this client. So I really like that, you know, and it's good to make sure that access permissions are set up properly, but just note that a VA will need, you know, high access to be able to do everything. But, you know, you should trust that person, and trust comes with time. And you can definitely start slow and say, right, I just want you to do this one job, or like you can give them test, you know, test kind of jobs to see how they get on, and build up that trust. But yeah, you do need to trust your VA, and, you know they're not going to send your clients dodgy emails or anything like that.
And in Powered RA2, you can see a log file as well. So you can go through and have a look at what you know, every page of that user. So you know, you set up a user for the admin, for the virtual assistant to utilize, and then you can see exactly what has been accessed there. I think the other, that point too about what you're saying about admin notes is something, you know, from a Powered RA perspective that we thought was very important, that for those who may not be familiar, but in Powered RA there's clinical forms and admin forms. So there's, let's say you send a form out, online form, to collect information on intake and so forth. So you can flag that as clinical or admin. And the same with the clinical, with notes. So you can say it's a clinical note or an admin note. And that, and then control access to that. So if an admin person wants to write notes, which is often helpful, you know, they've tried to contact someone, or they've sent an invoice and they're following up, or they've taken a phone call and they want to record that, they've got a dedicated admin spot that they can record that. So it's not going to the sort of medical file or the clinical file, but there's a record of it. But also, the, like you said, the access is restricted. So, you know, they can do all the other administrative things, but the detail of the clinical, you know, the clinical notes and the clinical forms are blocked. And therefore, you know, we're preserving that, you know, extra layer of restriction, and making sure that people only have access to information that they need to perform their role. So that's good. Anything else for best practices, that things that are that you've noticed over the years that are, it's kind of critical to making it all work well?
Well, critical to making it all work well, I'm not sure about that. But I think, like, with the last point with the support in the client practitioner relationship, you can separate things, right? So when it comes to invoicing, for example, this is like one of the biggest kind of contention points, I think. If you're like chasing for money, I know therapists can really struggle with that. They can struggle asking their clients to pay them, even though they've, you know, given their service. And I have a lot of clients that really struggle around money. And so it can be so much easier for me, not knowing that person, I've never met them, I don't see them, I can just easily send them a really polite professional email asking for them to pay for the service they've had. And I've had that before where, you know, I've asked somebody to send a payment reminder, and then the client's gone into the therapy session and said, I'm really mad at Kim, she asked me to send her money, but I was going to pay you, I was only a week overdue or something. But it didn't affect that therapeutic relationship between, because the anger or the, you know, resentment, whatever, was put onto me rather than it being a massive issue for the client and therapist, and they would have had to like have this long conversation about, you know, whatever, I'm not a therapist, but you know, about that relationship. So it can really help support keeping that relationship as it is, and then keeping the business side separate. You know, if I'm telling a client, I'm really sorry, I'm sorry you've got to cancel this, but you've done it under 24 hours, so I'm still going to charge you. You know, enforcing those, it's so much easier for a VA to enforce those kind of boundaries that you have set, the therapist has set them, but it's easier for the VA to kind of enforce them rather than the therapist.
Absolutely. And I think in addition to preserving that relationship, it also increases the financial viability of the practice, right? Because, you know, often where you see ad hoc waiving of fees and whatnot, it's often driven by the awkwardness, you know, that the therapist, you know, is concerned about damaging the relationship. Maybe they're uncomfortable. And often, like I said, not, you know, that comfortable with the money side of things anyway. It's sort of a little bit of an area that they might not feel super confident about. So by having that little bit of distance, I think it often allows a better enforcement, better consistency for the patient experience, that yes, you know, we do require that notices is the policy. And then that tends to have that kind of flow-on effect of people, you know, one, turning up, and two, if they don't, you're not missing out on that time because the policy is being enforced. So it, and I mean, it just takes one of those and one collection of a missed appointment or something, and you've covered, you know, usually like your entire cost of, you know, your service. So,
I also get that around low fees. See, I don't know why, but therapists seem to have a really hard time like charging their full rate. So they'll have their rate on the website, but then they really struggle to say that number to a client. Yeah. And I had one client and she said, oh, I'm charging somebody less. And I said, why? And she was like, well, I just got the impression she couldn't afford it. And I said, tell me the conversation you had.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, like I told her my fee is £100, but blah, 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 blah. And she just kept talking. And I was like, why did you talk? You didn't even give the person a chance to say yes or no before you assumed that they couldn't pay. Yes. So, you know, even things like that, you know, having that conversation with the VA can be so much more happy to be like, this is their fee.
Yeah.
End of, you know, and so it can, so it can just help with that as well. You know, absolutely. You not having to worry about telling people your fee, even though it's on your website and you've decided that's what it is.
Yeah, and it's a more confident experience then too for the patient, because it's just, this is the fact, here it is, and that's that. Is there a time or when should people think about, if at all, bringing admin in-house? So what are the things that perhaps people need to kind of think about, you know, using an external VA versus internalizing that?
Yeah, I mean, we work with lots of different clients, from, you know, single practitioners to group practices, and we've not got to the point where somebody's like, I actually need someone in-house now. The maximum we do for a large group practice of four therapists is 40 hours a month.
Yeah.
So it's still really low. And if you think about, if you took somebody on, you'd have to pay them a certain, you know, you'd have to pay them a salary, and that would be guaranteed whether they did 1 hour or 4 hours or 8 hours that day. So I think you'd have to be a really big practice to need an in-house person. And obviously you would weigh up the cost of like, okay, well, if I'm paying £40 a month versus, because a VA will charge more hourly than you would have to pay hourly for a person, you know, for an employee, but then you're not paying the employer tax, the national insurance, pension contributions, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I haven't seen any practice need an actual in-house, but that's not to say that they don't exist, obviously. And you know, if you have a lot of people come into the practice and there's a lot of admin around that, you know, actually in the office, then you might need somebody inside. But I think that's,
if it's sort of set up in the right way, it can be scaled. And I think that's right. And I think you know, going back to our experience with the practice, we got to a certain point where it made sense, you know, to do that. But that was also in the early days with Powder as well, where that was before we had things like integrated credit card billing, before we had online forms, things like that. So there was a point where, from an administrative point of view, like having people in-house, you know, providing admin would allow for more of those sort of practical things to be done. But as software, you know, in our case, you know, Powder is sort of developed, then we've built in more and more features to kind of minimize that need, that, you know, people will have their automatic appointment reminders, they'll have their online forms, so they've got all the information, there's no paper forms that people have to fill out. Payments can be done, you know, using the integrated, you know, stored credit cards and so forth, so that there's less of that actual interaction required, and it means that it's more conducive now to using virtual, you know, admin and doing that externally. So I think the take home you're saying there's no magic point at which people need to, but looking at that kind of value and the number of practitioners. Okay, finally, just where can people get more information about you? And one thing I think you mentioned just before, but I should say, is that right now you're not actually taking on any new customers. Your books are kind of full at the moment, so there might be some disappointed people out there about that. But they can actually still get some information and tips and some guides and resources and things from you. So, where should people go, and what do you have there?
Sure. So yeah, my website's up there and I have so many free resources there. So I told you about the private practice workflow, which will really help you get started with your SOPs. I also have a business starter business setup checklist, which is specific to the UK. But if you're starting a practice in the UK, it's got a checklist of all the things that you should do to get your business started. There's loads of other free resources on there, like email templates and things like that. I've also got a free Power Diary setup guide and checklist. So it really helps you get all of the information out of your head into a workbook so that you can then get your Power Diary set up. Yeah. Because I truly believe in the system, like I said. So, and I wouldn't be here if I didn't. So, and also I've got a YouTube channel, which I love doing. I love doing YouTube, and I've got about 60 videos on there at the moment with all stuff around private practice, all kind of stuff we've talked about, but it's not just about VA stuff. I talk about finances over there. I've got a whole playlist on Power Diary as well. I've got like a tutorial, an overview of the system, how we onboard clients using Power Diary, and considerations that you might want to think about when you're looking at having an EHR. So there's loads of things on there. So I'd love people to go and check out the channel.
Yeah, definitely go check it. I mean, I personally think you give way too much away for free. Like, I think it's amazing the resources that you have on there. And definitely encourage people to go and check out the things that you have. I think you've got a great insight into running practices, and you've got a strength in this that a lot of people struggle with. And I know we're talking a little bit in the UK context because that's where you're located. But what you're saying, I absolutely know resonates in the other globally. That those same things we hear it in all the different markets. It's the same types of issues that people have. So definitely, if you like what Kim's been saying, check out Kim's website and YouTube channel. We're going. Finally, just if you need help with anything with Power Diary, of course, our team's always there, so you can contact the support. There's online chat there. You can book live one-on-one, video phone call, and we've got the knowledge base and everything there as well. So anything we can help with. If you have any questions, then do let us know. So, look, thank you very much, Kim. It's been great talking to you, and you've been very generous with your time and with the information, and I'm sure people have got a lot out of it. So thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Practice Power Up Podcast with Damian Adler. Come back often and make sure you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Your feedback is important.